Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Email us with any advertising inquiries or basketball questions at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @LockedOnBulls. Make sure you check out the other fine podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, two Bulls have Olympic medals now. Jimmy Butler, Olympic gold medal with Team USA. Nico Mirotic, bronze with Spain.
Absolutely. Jimmy became the first member of the Chicago Bulls while he was a Bull to win an Olympic gold medal since the one and only Scottie Pippen way back in 1996. Obviously, big deal for Jimmy. This is something that meant a lot to him leading up. I mean, dating back to last January, I believe, if I remember. I think we were asking Jimmy about that a little bit. You know, you want to be in that Olympic, on the Olympic team, because we knew he was in the Olympic pool. I think those that came out sometime late in the winter there. And Jimmy never backed down from it. Famously said he's not afraid of Zika whatsoever at all, because he's from Tomball, Texas. And he got the reward that he and Team USA earned, a 30-point win over Serbia in the gold medal game. It was never close. This was the same Serbian team that in pool play, Team USA only beat by three. Serbia had a three-pointer in the final 10 seconds, so look for the tie. This one wasn't that close. Kevin Durant didn't let it be close. DeMarcus Cousins played well. DeAndre Jordan played well. And Team USA got the gold again for the third straight Olympics. First time Jimmy's been in the USA pipeline. And I think what we anxiously await now is, where's Jimmy going to put that gold medal, which I'm sure we'll round back and find for you sometime, but definitely a big day for Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, this is great for him, even though he had a couple of moments during the tournament, particularly in the last game where, or the last couple of games where, you know, the games seemed like they were close, and then they, you know,
turned the defensive tide.
Jimmy was part of that defensive unit that really, you know, turned the tide of the games. But, you know, in terms of scoring, he didn't really do too much. His shooting struggles were still kind of there, and it makes me a little bit skeptical. I don't know how much we want to really read into this, but it's not like, I mean, we're talking about, you know, part of hoping that, you know, the Rondo, Wade, Butler thing can work is Jimmy, out of the three of them, has to kind of get back to league average three-point shooting. He didn't do great from that end in the Olympics.
Yeah, in eight games, Jimmy Butler shot 22% on three-pointers, 34% from the field, average 5.6 points per game. Obviously was on that defensive unit,
right?
That was more his role, and it's one of those things. I mean, another Tom Thibodeau-ism, I guess, to say would be, know your job, do your job. Jimmy's job wasn't to score on Team USA for Coach K and Tibbs. That was Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, Klay Thompson's job, mainly Paul George in there as well. But yeah, you say how much to read into it. Jimmy's jump shot, I mean, largely looked like it was broken.
Yeah.
Now, we have to take this with a grain of salt here, because it's not like he's hoisting jumpers for 4 hours a day on the off days in Rio. Like, this is an Olympic experience. You knew you were going to win. You're out there
sure.
to see the rest of Team USA, check out Rio a little bit, hang with the crew. So it's not the same. I don't think it's the same daily hourly dedication that you would have during the NBA season. But like you said, if we're going to read into Nico Mirotic's performance in the Olympics, which was very good, and they got the bronze medal in a one-point win over Australia. Nico had another good game, and he had a good Olympic stretch, too. 12.9 points per game on 49% shooting, 45% on three-pointers.
Yeah.
If we rewind to Friday, we're taping this Sunday after the gold medal game, but on Friday, USA beat Spain in the semifinals and did so in part because Nico wasn't out there to help Spain too much because he had foul trouble, got a technical foul, which an Olympic competition or an international competition counts as a personal foul.
Which I don't understand, by the way.
Yeah, I don't like that rule. I like a lot of things about international competition, namely the only dead ball timeout, so can't call the live ball timeout. Love that. Just that short. I don't mind the 40-minute game too. I like how that gets done in like an hour and 55 minutes instead of these 2-hour 35-minute games that we'll have in the NBA sometimes.
Right.
But yeah, you don't want to see those star players getting a technical foul and then sitting out because of the personal foul thing. I agree with you on that one. But back to Nico, I mean, he had a good Olympic stretch. So if we're going to credit Nico's play and say it means something, I think it's probably only fair to be a little skeptical of Jimmy's shooting right now, right? I mean, if you want to be straight and fair here both ways.
Yeah, and by the way, did you watch any of the bronze medal game this morning?
I didn't watch too much of it, so you're going to have to fill me in on most of that one.
It was a little bit of a controversial ending. Australia was up by one, and Sergio Rodriguez of Spain drove for a layup, missed the layup. The refs called a foul on Australia, and, you know, several replays showed that there wasn't a foul, but he got two free throws and made them both, and then Australia didn't really do anything with the 5 seconds that were left, and Spain ended up winning by 1 point. It seemed like it was kind of a questionable call, and then Andrew Bogut even said as much afterwards. Andrew Bogut, by the way, fouled out during this game, and he said that there were questionable calls during the whole tournament, but that's FIBA refs for you.
Well, that sounds like that's not even our famous classic shade of the day. That's just direct criticism.
Yes.
Right there from Andrew Bogut. And I know Australians played some of the best basketball early in the tournament. I mean, it was maybe the best basketball, most fun to watch out of any teams there early in the tournament. Because say what you want about Team USA. They got the job done. Killed them in the championship game. That reflects well on them. I don't know that we're going to sit here and stack them up in the rankings list of greatest American teams ever here that we sent to the Olympics, but it was kind of isolation heavy and start and stop and stagnant offense for much of the tournament. Kevin Durant got the job done great, shot well in the title game, and everyone stepped up too. These past couple games, DeAndre Jordan played really well, but it wasn't like beautiful basketball from America, you know what I mean? And some of that was roster composition, I think, too. And this isn't a crew that plays together a whole lot. But, I mean, I think we should take a moment to point out and reflect. I mean, America, since Coach K was named head coach of Team USA in 2005, just concluded a run of going 60-1 in international competition. 3 gold medals, 2 world championships, World Cup championships. Derrick Rose was a member of that 2010 and 14 team, so he did win gold, but not in the Olympics. Another Bulls tie-in there, former Bulls tie-in, I should say, in that case. But that's just an astounding record: 28-0 in an exhibition contest, 88-1. USA basketball is back. 11 years later, we can firmly say USA basketball is back.
We can, and they don't have a bad coach taking over too.
Greg Popovich.
He's all right.
Yeah, he's been with the Team USA select team in Vegas, I believe, back in that training camp when you were there, right? Like, I'm looking forward to, if nothing else, like, Pop's going to be great for the Olympic part because we get to quote him more times per year now, you know? Kind of get to quote him in a new regard. And no one has media briefings, give and takes, back and forth, quite like Greg Popovich in the NBA, obviously, but now we get to kind of come at him from a new angle, and I say we as all the media members that get across paths with him at any point.
Yeah, and Pop's also a military guy, so you know that representing the national team is going to mean a lot to him, too. I'm really excited to see what he does with it. Hopefully, and I don't know how much of what this team was a little bit stagnant. I don't know how much of that was on Coach K and how much of that was on the roster, but I'm really excited to see kind of how Pop, you know, reinvents their offense.
Yeah, because, I mean, the beautiful game. I mean, was it Argentina? Didn't someone that was kind of dating back to the 2004 Argentina team that won gold and Manu on that, and there was just the kind of parallel or tie-in to playing the beautiful game with the Spurs later. And the Spurs, the early era Spurs with Tim Duncan, didn't play like beautiful basketball. At the start, it was throw it to him on the block and spot up on threes. But as they got Manu and Tony Parker more involved, and Tony Parker is one of several guys, Manu as well, and Carmelo just said after the game, they're all done with Olympic competition, it sounds now. So there's kind of a changing of the guards, but to tie it back, I mean, there was a lot of beautiful basketball played by the Spurs over the years. Argentina was the team that kind of played that in 2004 and even the past few Olympics too, but they're kind of going a different direction too. There seems like a lot of older teams, like the next Olympic round in Tokyo in 2020, we're going to see markedly different international teams probably. I mean, for Team USA and for Argentina, obviously, and some other teams perhaps as well, but anything else in this Olympic competition stick out to you, Sean? I mean, about anyone on Team USA or other countries? I mean, obviously there was the Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson getting that first look with the Super Team Warriors together as three of those guys. But anything stick out to you?
Well, I think what you were just saying about the it being kind of a different international landscape by 2020. I think there's something to that with Argentina kind of being at the end of this run. Brazil seems like they're sort of at the end of the run. Even Spain,
obviously.
I doubt that, Pau Gasol and Sergio Rodriguez and Rudy Fernandez are all going to be playing again in 2020. But, you look at some of the up-and-coming teams. I really like what Australia is doing. I like what Croatia is doing. And obviously they didn't qualify for the Olympics this time, but if Andrew Wiggins is on the national team, I think Canada is going to be interesting
and,
going forward.
Dante Exum at some point should join Australia if he wasn't hurt. I mean, next go around, you'd like to see. And I guess it's the age-old question, a talking point all the time, is the world catching up to Team USA in basketball? Is Team USA coming back to them a little bit? Or is Team USA just as dominant as ever? Because they just did win the gold medal game by 30 points. In the last two Olympics, 2008, 2012, both times they played Spain in the final, and competitive games, really good games, that USA won by 10 points or so, kind of in that range. So they were a little clearly better, but it was competitive games. This time, it wasn't competitive. I mean, their toughest game probably was against Spain, the six-point win in the semifinals. It's like those two teams always cross paths, but is the world catching up? I don't know. To me, USA just sent, a C-list team?
Right. That's...
I mean, maybe even a D-list team. We were thinking about this going back to the 2008 team, looking at the roster. America had Kobe, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron. So they basically had, three of the best players in the NBA?
Yeah.
Three of the four best players in the NBA were on Team USA. This time around, you didn't have Steph Curry or LeBron. KD was there, so you kind of had, one of the three best, probably. But
Harden pulled out, yeah. Russ pulled out, Kawhi Leonard pulled out.
And right there, we're talking six of the top seven, eight players probably in the NBA. So that was a C-list, D-list team, kind of. But America, rolling on. I don't see anyone beating them in 2020 yet, either. A lot can change in 4 years, but international competition just isn't quite there yet, I don't think. I was intrigued, though. I mean, the Klay Thompson KD thing was interesting. There's a couple sequences where KD found Klay. KD was not shy about shooting here as it went deep. He kind of rose to the occasion here again when America needed him, because I think we dated back and talked about this at the start of the Olympics. We're like, we're glad USA sent Kevin Durant, because you need a headlining star. And they didn't exactly have one if he wasn't going to go, because Carmelo played really well for long stretches, carried the Americans in some games. But still, he's on the backside of his career, Steph not going. KD liked that moment. He loved that moment, embraced it. He was going to be the guy in the championship game. He's already become the villain in the NBA just by signing with Golden State, which is just hilarious to me, because Russ Westbrook, the most tenacious player in the NBA, turns into, the sweetheart or whatever. You know what I mean? Everyone loves him. He's the darling now. Just because he stayed in Oklahoma City. But if the Olympic gold medal game was any indication, KD's going to embrace this villain thing a little bit, it seems like. He's going to be fine with all this.
Yeah, but, I mean, we'll see how long that lasts. Because if you remember, when LeBron went to Miami in 2010, he was so hated that first year. And then he was kind of, playing into it and encouraging the boos and stuff. And then later on, after they won the next couple of titles, because they didn't win the first year, he kind of admitted, this isn't me. This isn't who I am. I'm not really the villain. But yeah, I mean, it certainly does help the United States that Kevin Durant was on the team. He single-handedly kind of today in the gold medal game made sure that they wasn't close, because it was kind of an ugly first quarter.
Oh, yeah.
The U.S. only were beating Serbia by 3 points. They were up 19-16 at the end of the first quarter. And then Kevin Durant just 20, he had 30 points. 24 of them came in the first half. He just, at a certain point after that kind of ugly, scrappy first quarter, he was just like, no, we're not doing this.
So KD, he's kind of playing his role transition a little bit when he goes to the Warriors, because it's going to be the give and take with Steph,
right,
obviously, and not be the go-to guy, which is kind of funny to think. He's the go-to guy on Team USA, but he's going to go back to his NBA team now, and he won't even quite be the go-to guy because Steph's there. And they'll have to figure that out. But when you can rain threes and also be an unselfish basketball player, I think it's pretty easy to figure that out. A guy that will also transition roles a little bit when he goes back, Jimmy Butler, to the Bulls, going to be the leading man. Do you find any concern that if Jimmy can't knock down shots on Team USA with Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyle Lowry, Paul George flanking him in these situations, that, like, with more attention on the Bulls, does that mean anything?
I've been kind of pessimistic this whole time about, you know, Jimmy being able to become a great outside shooter. You know, as we've said, you kind of, if you're the Bulls, you kind of hope that he gets back to, you know, where he was in 2014-15 when he shot 37 or 38% as opposed to where he was last season. But I'm not, like, I'm not going into this year thinking that we're going to get, like, a knockdown three-point shooting version of Jimmy Butler. He's that guy out of Rondo, out of him, Rondo, and Wade, he's the one that I think has the best chance of really becoming a better three-point shooter at this point, because obviously Wade just kind of is what he is, and I feel like Rondo's year last year was an outlier, but I'm not super encouraged by what we saw from Jimmy on that end.
Yeah, and again, it's a lot to read into, but it's something also that's on Jimmy's mind, because again, he'll always say every time, you know, oh, I got to work on everything. Like, that's his go-to line.
Yeah.
But he has, over the past couple of years, made, obviously, in summer, 2015, it was ball handling that was such a big deal to him. So I think he will make a point to get those shooting numbers up a little, or put in the work to try to get them up. I don't know that they will go in. But one of his backcourt mates and one of the three alphas, a third of the trio, is Dwayne Wade.
Right.
And as we told you on last podcast, I think breaking news first, we told you that according to Dwayne Wade's Snapchat, he'd ramped up his workouts to 2-a-days, and his body was feeling the effects of it. So Dwayne Wade is putting the time in the gym, 5 weeks from training camp, I think. Mainly what Dwayne Wade's doing now when he's not in the gym is hanging out with his dogs.
Yes.
Gar Foreman made the point at the press conference that Gabby Union's dogs, like, they're going to have to get acclimated to Chicago, and I was like, how many dogs does he have? You know what I mean? Like, what are we talking here? Guess, Sean? You have a guess? How many?
I've counted four. At least two.
At least two? And it looks like we might have two more. Might have four dogs. Two little guys, two black dogs that kind of look like black labs, something like that. I don't know. It's hard to see in the Snapchat mix exactly what breed of dog they are right there, but a little bit bigger guys too. But Dwayne Wade's dogs, Dwayne Wade's Saturday was not really eventful, but a little comical. According to Dwayne Wade's Snapchat, he got performance-enhancing drug tested by the NBA on Saturday. So that's what he did. He said he had to drink a lot of water and such. So he basically did that and hung out with his dogs all day. And his dogs were sliding down the hill on their stomachs in Dwayne Wade's backyard, which was pretty comical. So Dwayne Wade hitting the gym, hanging out with his dogs, hanging out with Gabby. He seems to be enjoying Chicago, and I get a kick out of Dwayne. Just everything he does. I think he's going to be great for Bulls entertainment, but I think he might be helpful for Bulls morale, too, because, like, he seems like a happy-go-lucky guy right now at this point of his career. Does he not seem that way to you, too, a little bit?
Yeah, he does. I mean, if you're Dwayne Wade, I mean, think about this. Obviously, I think he'd like to be, you know, competing for championships, but he's won three titles. He's won a Finals MVP.
Yeah.
He's, you know, besides Jordan and Kobe, he's arguably the third greatest shooting guard of all time. He doesn't really have to prove anything to anybody at this point. Like, he's just kind of here at this point. He's getting his money. He's going to try to mentor some of these young guys. He's back home in Chicago, which is where he's from.
Yeah, and I think there's something to really be said, too, for the new look group. So the Bulls lost to the Cavs in six games in spring, May 2015.
Yeah.
Basically brought back the same team for Fred Hoiberg's first season, thinking it would be Fred being the difference maker. But at the same time, you had to realize that there were, 13, 14 of the same players somewhere in there who'd just gone through that before. And so the old vibe was still there.
It was,
you know,
just Portis,
I mean,
and Felicio, the two rookies that
were
different.
Yeah, so, like, the old vibe was there just in terms of kind of that weight on the shoulders, not getting past the Cavs. And I know you got a new face at coaching, but the NBA, we know this, it's a players league.
Yeah.
So just to have a new infusion, I think, of players can help the attitude. And how much attitude translates to wins on the court? I don't know. That's a lot to say, because the Bulls are not going to do anything successful if the offense is broken because these guys can't shoot or get along. But at least at the start in training camp, I think it's going to be helpful just to have new faces, fresh faces, And like we said on the last podcast, try not to get anyone hurt at training camp.
Yeah, it's just, that's the thing. As somebody who covers this team, I'm just glad it's going to be different. Like, we're not going to have the exact same stuff. You know, we don't have to deal with the Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler stuff. Yeah. And then the Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah stuff. Just all the same stuff. It just kind of got old. Like, at least, no matter whether the Bulls are good or not, it's going to be new stuff to talk about, and that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, and, like, from our perspective, so, like, our thing here is we're at Bulls practice, and Mike Dunleavy is one of the most professional guys in the NBA, just as far as his demeanor approach. Always so good with the media, honest, straightforward. Would criticize the team more a little bit where they needed to be criticized, and we appreciated that. But after, what, 2 years of that, 3 years, whatever of that, like, Mike Dunleavy coming to the podium or in front of reporters to talk about
because
whether Derek and Jimmy can get along, to talk about the front office coaching turmoil back when it was Tibbs, like, all of that, like, that to us is just kind of old. So, like, we just like the kind of the new era of just stuff new happening. And I think fans will like that, too. I think they're going to get a kick out of Dwayne Wade the more they see of him in a Bulls uniform, as long as he's healthy. And I think the maintenance is something, too. We've talked about this. I don't know that Dwayne Wade needs to be playing back-to-backs. I mean, he's already here on Snapchat saying how tired he is, you know, on two-a-day workouts.
He's 34.
Yeah, he's 34, and, I mean, he's had a couple laid low for a couple months more so, which is what you have to do when you're a veteran. But that, will be a training camp storyline to monitor just the usage of how they plan to approach it. With Dwayne Wade, and we've talked about, too, how they split up minutes, whether they stagger minutes between Dwayne and Rondo and Jimmy a little bit, so the second unit's never without one of them, maybe, I think might be a good deal. But those questions will be answered in training camp, which starts sometime
about five weeks away.
September, 5 weeks away. Till then, we might be a little more lighthearted on the podcast. We need your questions. Send them to lockedonbulls@gmail.com or at lockedonbulls on Twitter, because we will count on you, the listener, to carry us through some of these podcast episodes over the next few weeks. We'll do them a couple times a week, as we have been now, but it's not really basketball heavy in terms of competition. What is it that you're watching for, Sean? Who are these unsigned guys on the NBA free agent market that are left?
Well, nothing that affects the Bulls, but J.R. Smith is still unsigned. I think everybody's kind of expecting him to go back to the Cavs at some point. It's just a matter of them giving him the kind of money that he wants. But two more pretty somewhat significant names are still on the market, Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith, both unsigned.
I'm going to assign you the Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith watch, okay?
Because
I don't think I'm going to be doing it.
You know I'm on it.
And you misspoke with the JR thing when the Cavs decide to give him the money he wants or that feels fair. You mean when LeBron tells the Cavs when to give JR Smith X amount of money.
Well, but he signed a two-year deal now.
LeBron, yeah, I know, but still.
So he can't do that anymore.
He can still direct them what to do, when to do it, even if he's under contract.
Well, in his uninterrupted video where he announced that he was re-signing, he said, let's get JR's deal done now.
Oh, nice. I didn't catch that. Well, remember, LeBron James might have become, I know he had back problems his first year in Cleveland, no doubt, and that two-week hiatus during the middle of the season when he went to Miami and, like, didn't go on that West Coast road trip or kind of sat out part of the road trip is still one of just like the all-time power moves by a player in NBA history, is it not? So let's just remember, LeBron still absolutely can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. In recent memory, that's included beating the Bulls all the time. In the near future, that might be telling Cleveland management and ownership, sign my guy, J.R. Smith. But that's what we'll be watching for. And again, please do send us questions to @LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Advertising inquiries always welcome as well. Follow me on Twitter @CodyWesterlin. Follow Sean @Hyken and @LockedOnBulls as always. Sean, find us where? iTunes, Stitcher,
Audio Boom, Google Play, TuneIn. Leave us 5-star reviews. Lots of 5-star reviews.
Appreciate it. As always, thanks for listening and catch you next time.